preacher, not too many people would read Bible study. It's because they had a dream they don't want to tell. But I notice a few people have been. Well, how many of you dreamed last night, first of all? Hey, it must be more than that.
It's not time.
How many of you dreamed last night? All right, how many of you remember your dream? Same number? How many of you dreamed about God? Nobody. That's very interesting. One. Oh, there is one? One dream about God. What is that? Half God. All right. That's very interesting. And does anybody dream about Christ? Yeah, that's a very interesting phenomenon right there. That of all the dreams, there must have been 50 across the room. Nobody dreamed about Christ, which is the center of our lives. If you go through the Bible, God is almost in every dream. All the dreams that are recorded there. But today, how few people dream about Jesus Christ? You ask a psychologist. Very interesting. All right, how many of you dreamed about dying or some form of death or tremendous danger? Hand up. One, two, three, four, five, six, a lot more. All right, you want to tell us your dream? He was in a German prison camp and... submarine was going to blow up your boat, and then did it? And then it didn't. What happened then?
I woke up.
He woke up. All right, that's one way to get out of it. Let's take one more danger dream. Who else? I don't remember who they all were. Somebody have a really interesting dream about danger that they want to tell us this morning? Come on. Don't be afraid. No more? Who are the people who had a dream about it? Yes, all right, okay. A little louder. That's a very brilliant dream. The rocks are all moving, constantly moving and jumping. The rocks are going all over the place. And in order for you to survive, you have to dance from one rock to the other as they move. In a way, there is something of your hope, isn't there? That you can dance through all of the dangers of life and still be dancing at the end. Dance all the way to the end. All right, let's take forget about the danger for a moment. Let's take one other dream, a couple more dreams. Does anybody have a dream that you think was really unusual last night, that because of the situation here or something else made you dream a most unusual dream? Anybody want to tell a most unusual dream? Now, Kurt Jackson tells me that whenever he dreams, he flies. I normally walk or run in my dreams. I don't fly usually, but I think it'd be fun to fly. All right. Anybody else have a dream they want to tell us this morning? All right, yes, please. Please, ma'am. That'll go. They're bringing water in what? Trucks? Ah, the water was coming out of the rocks in Holden. Moses was around here with his stick, right? I think that's probably true. That's something of the discovery of what your hope is about what Holden is for you. Anybody else have one more dream that they would like to tell us? It's exciting, interesting. Come on. One more. Hope.
I lost 5 pounds.
That's worth about $15, right? You lost 5 pounds. All right, Dr. Christensen, yes, please, let's have yours. I was in the dream. A primitive truck. A primitive truck was rolling by. With just the lines. And that was me. Now one of the other fellows said, I don't know about that dream, but one of the other fellows said that he dreamed about me too. He woke up, all he could remember about the dream was, he haw says the donkey. All right. Dreams tell us about our dreams. Dreams tell us about our dreams, about our hopes, our struggle with tomorrow, with what we expect about tomorrow, what we fear about tomorrow. Dreams tell us about our wishes. And we live between this tension, between the promises we have, the things that we've learned, the things that we know, and the expectations of tomorrow. What might be, what is coming, the hopes that we have. Dreams tell us something about our dreams. And if we live like some people say, I wish that I had my whole life to live over, then forget it. If you live in the past, and only in the past, then something is wrong. There are some people who say, I will live just for now because who knows what tomorrow will bring. And such a person is also half dead. We cannot live either just in the past or in the present, but we must live from the past, for now, into the future. Tomorrow and the dreams and the hopes and the promise is part and parcel of life. And unless we have a tomorrow, unless we have a goal, unless we have a reach for our life, for our faith, we're in trouble. And we must learn to struggle with Christ in all of this. Reaching out to tomorrow. If we resign ourselves and say, all right, I'm just going to live my life like any ordinary person with an ordinary sweet routine, well, they let things happen. I can't change the world. It's too big a problem. Then it's too late. Then you've resigned yourself. Then apathy sets in. Every one of us must have a dream that we can change the world. And if we all have that dream, we can. We have to have a dream. And the dream that Solomon had is one that helps us to see where to go in being mediators in the middle of all of our dreaming. Mediators through dreams for dreams. Solomon was a snob. He was not like the other parts of the family. His mother, you remember, was that gal Bathsheba, and all the things that went on. And she was a very protective mother and took care of him, and she, through very careful intrigue, had gotten him to be on the king on the throne. The whole business was rather underhanded, but nevertheless, Solomon got to be king. And by this time, he was a rather spoiled, sophisticated, educated snob, who had been carefully secluded. He didn't go out and fight the battles with the other boys. He didn't play cows, boys, and Indians on the streets of Jerusalem. You can expect him to have thick horn-rimmed glasses and a kind of blubbery lip. That's Solomon, the snob. And suddenly he's king. His old tough playboy father has died. The warrior par excellence has died, and here he's on the throne. And now he comes before God, and the struggle begins. How am I going to be king? And so he, because he's a snob and thinks he knows a lot to start with, goes to the temple in Gibeon and sacrifices. He sacrifices, it says, 1,000 offerings on the altar. And God appears to him and says, ask whatever you can, like, and I shall give it to you. And I paraphrase the prayer of Solomon this way. It's really almost directly from the text, but let's listen to it. So you get a feel of Solomon as he prays. Well, I feel on top of the world, God. A king with a crack at the world. I feel so great. Now that I've plastered your altar with 1,000 buckets of blood and 1,000 sacrifices, quite a splash. I feel as if I could take on anyone. And there you stand right in front of me, the King of Kings, whispering to me, tempting me, saying, giving me one unlimited wish. I can hear you now. Ask anything you want, anything. The kingdom, honor, glory, sports cars, TV, mansions, fame, private satellite, anything you want. And you kept your promise to David, God. You kept your love for him. You placed his son on the throne. What more could anyone ask? Now I'm king. I'm on the throne of David, the heir to all this glory. What more could anyone ask? I'm going to rule your people, the people of Israel. I feel fantastic. No, I don't. I feel lousy. I don't know how to rule. I'm scared. I cannot fight. I hate battles. I'm not used to the marketplace. I'm no leader. Oh. I'm to be the servant. A servant of all these thousands and thousands of people. To rule them. King, I know what I need. I need one thing. Understanding. And that's made up of guts and concern and common sense. I need understanding. The king who can put himself in the sandals of his people if he's to mediate hope. I'm your servant. A servant must fill the shoes of a king to mediate hope. Let's take that last line again. It's maybe one of the best lines of mine for the week. A servant must fill the shoes of a king to mediate hope. And we would say it, a servant must fill the shoes of a king to mediate Christ. And that's what we're here for, to be kings who mediate Christ with this kind of understanding, with this kind of dream, with this kind of goal, that we are reaching out to show the world that there is hope in Jesus Christ, that we have a hope, and that we're not ashamed to tell the hope that is in us, that Christ is the center of our life and changes our life, that he can and he will, if we dare to say that we are kings, that Christ has given us the world to rule, and that we, if we're servants, must fill the shoes of that king, Jesus Christ, to mediate Christ. And that every Christian must be ready to say, I'm going to change the world because Christ is changing everything. And that you and I, if we understand what it means to be a servant, it means to take the shoes of the king and mediate him. There's a passage in the New Testament that says it so much better than I can ever say it. I'm just going to read it. It's in Philippians. It says the same thing beautifully. Listen to this, thinking of yourself this morning in relation to one other person, at least, that you're going to try and change something because you dare to have a hope and a promise and a dream for that person and for yourself. It reads like this: have this mind in you, which you have in Jesus Christ, who, though he was in the form of God, did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself and took the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of a man. And being found in human form, he humbled himself and became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. Therefore, God has highly exalted him as king, and bestowed on him the name that is above every name, that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow, in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. That kind of dream is not law, but the gospel. That kind of dream makes kings of us all. A servant must learn to fill the shoes of a king if he is to mediate Christ. Be kings today to each other. And you might want to continue to fill the box. Nobody's really been game started yet. Fill the dream box, Solomon says. And for tomorrow, if you want something to churn about, we're going to look at Job 9, 16, and 19. Job's struggle, Job's anger. If you have a prayer of anger you'd like to write now, either give it to me or put it in the box. A prayer, a struggle of anger. Okay.